You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. If you haven't had a chance to check out the Alpha Burley Pro, it is a 100% top to bottom waterproof boot. They're perfect for the style of hunting that is done this time of year, whether you're a waterfowl hunter or walking through some swamps to get to your favorite tree stand. Check out the Alpha Burley Pro. They come in a variety of camo options and insulation options. Go visit lacrossefootwear.com. Lacrosse Boots, done right since 1897.
Welcome to Land O'Lakes Podcast. This is your host, Adam.
And Matt Dye.
I didn't even include my last name, but
you said I'm on a first name basis.
I don't even know. We're over 100 by now.
Total podcast, for sure.
Total
podcast. We're probably 15-ish range.
I think we're at 30 on hunting and
86
or 7 on the other one. So
we're on rocking it.
Yeah, we've been doing this a while. So we're on a first name basis now, guys. And this is the hunting podcast that's following up part two of our Habitat Heroes podcast, where we talked about bottlenecks and all the things you can do in habitat speaking to improve bottlenecks, to not only increase the amount of species or the amount of healthy habitat on the landscape for your native animals, but also punching more tags. This one, obviously, devoted to the hunting side of that. So what are bottlenecks, how we can hunt them, how we can use this information we gained on the habitat one to improve them, and ultimately how we can have more fun enjoying the outdoors.
That's right. A couple weeks ago, we talked about and identified bottlenecks. And this week, like Adam said, this is how to hunt them. And as we're getting into this podcast, will, I guess, release the 30th of October. I mean, it is game on. Time to hunt bottlenecks, and that's why we're doing it this week, to get out that information that everyone can use to apply the next day or the weekend, whatever time you have to be able to hunt. You can use this right now.
You said it right there whenever you said time to get out there and hunt bottlenecks. A lot of guys, it's a great time to just get out there and hunt. But then it comes time to what's our best chance at punching tags. And we look at what deer are doing this time of the year, where we have these deer cruising, deer chasing, deer moving a lot. And what's our best chance at seeing deer? Where's the best chance that we're going to get to shoot one of our hitless bucks? And I think a lot of times people love to hunt food plots. But when it comes to this time of the year, I want to find a bedding area, or I want to find a bottleneck, or I want to find both say, that's my best chance.
There's I don't know if it's typically – I don't know if it's right to say this or not. But everyone wants to do, like, those iconic things, I feel like, in hunting, like, check it off. You know, I want to kill a non-typical buck. I want to kill a mature buck. In a food plot, like that's one of them. It's one of those things that's like, it kind of like makes you more of a man. I don't know, but I just feel like it's so overdone that it has misconstrued our information of how to appropriately hunt during this time of the year. Not saying that it can't be done, but we're just talking odds and what is in your favor as a deer hunter, and is right now, without question, hunting bottlenecks that are in close proximity or in relation that complement bedding areas. Sometimes that bottleneck can be a food plot like we talked about on the hunting one, but it is seriously understanding basically high traffic areas for deer. That's where you're going to kill more successfully, more times than not, these big mature bucks that you're
hunting. That's right. I mean, sure, if we're going to exclude television shows for our success. I'm really going to drag this out. For our success, when we take a poll and say, are there more, and I'm not even going to say mature, more shooter bucks. So that I will just say 3.5 and older, are there more mature bucks shot in bottlenecks, timber, outside of food plots or inside food plots. If we watch television shows, we might say food plots. If we talk to everyday hunters, they're probably going to tell us outside of food plots. And there's a reason for that. Food plots are created. They're not all equal. And they get a lot of hunting pressure. They get a lot of bad practices around them. They may be in bad locations. They may have trail cameras that we check every other day or every week. They may just, for some reason, they create an atmosphere that a mature buck may not want to be.
Yeah, I mean, and daylight exposure.
During daylight especially.
Like way out in the open. There's kind of number one. There's not generally cover right there immediate adjacent to a food plot. So, therefore, less activity by these adult deer.
Every time they step into it, they smell us, they hear us, or they sense our presence. There's another reason. And so, all that coming down to it, we'll make a bold statement and say we probably would guess that more deer get shot by playing the woodsmanship card and hunting bottlenecks, hunting bedding areas, hunting areas that are just letting deer do their natural travel patterns, and we're taking advantage of it.
And I think it goes back and even a step beyond just that woodsmanship, and it goes into understanding the whitetail biology and what they're doing this time of the year. What's on their mind? What are they seeking? And we know what they're trying to seek, but to me it is, are they receptive to it? So what we're talking about is does. They're trying to find receptive does, but yet does right now and for the next few weeks in our specific area aren't typically breeding. It's not the peak breeding. Peak breeding for us is like 11th, 12th, 14th, 16th, somewhere through there.
Not the 13th.
Every day! But the 13th.
They do not
take a break.
They do not want to conceive a fawn on the 13th.
Bad luck for her.
Bad luck.
She's the one that gets to eat my coyote.
So yeah. Peak rut for us, peak breeding is the November 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, right in there.
Now, yes, there are some deer that are getting bred right now. We know that.
And it could be November 5th through the 8th for you.
Right.
But here for us, Southern Missouri, that's where we're at.
So right now, bucks are trying to find those does. They are pushing does, nudging does, chasing does, and moving them all around. So that means that deer, both bucks and does, are on their feet. And on their feet during daylight hours, a buck may come bump a treetop, may bump a bedding area, get these does on their feet. So as these deer are on their feet more and more and more through this window, where are they going to be at? They're going to be out in these areas that are bottlenecked. And so obviously that makes a great place to deer hunt. But because of the pressure and the presence of all these young bucks and what we've seen, I guess, in the prior weeks, young bucks doing a lot of the chasing and nudging, these does are getting to be tired of this. And they are not going into the open where they're just exposed to be seen from,
especially not during daylight.
Yeah, especially not during those time frames. So they're not going to these food plots, these big ag fields, as much because they're very vulnerable, exposed there. Not because necessarily just hunting pressure, but because of the tireless just nagging of bucks trying to find the receptive does and chase them. So they're in more areas of cover. So that was why we tend to hunt and suggest everyone else to hunt in areas that are timbered and have bottlenecks.
That's right. And we'll say that again on the next podcast about does becoming tired of being pestered. They go into a food plot and they're not ready. They're not receptive. And every little spike, forked horn, 3.5-year-old buck comes out, nudges them, comes over, kind of chases them around. They're tired of it. So they're starting to seek out the thickest cover. And because of that, they are hanging out in those bedding areas. But then if you have bottlenecks between those bedding areas, you're getting this natural travel of bucks going from one bedding area to the next through the bottlenecks right in front of your tree stand, right?
And this is where we have to, I guess, be that woodsmanship, be that woodsman, and have possess woodsmanship skills, because we need to be able to identify bedding areas. We need to be able to find them on the landscape, on a property, and then we need to be able to find the bottlenecks to be successful on a routine basis during this time of the year. So from previous podcasts, we've identified where to look at, where to find these bottlenecks. We identified within this week's Habitat podcast, the Habitat features that you can use to complement these bottlenecks. Now we're talking about how to hunt them. For us, in one of our situations that we're in right now, and we kind of briefly talked about it, podcasts, what we're going to refer to as the North Saddle on the Prairie Hollow property, is the approach to be able to access it. We're going to do the least amount of damage, as well as the proper wind to be able to hunt it, where we're going to do the least amount of damage because it's a saddle. So typically, in certain terrain changes like that, the wind can swirl. So there's obviously a lot of changes going on with the property. There's loggers in there. There's more food than ever in a certain area that I think is making these bucks that we're seeing on trail camera move more through this area. There's certain areas of the farm that aren't being touched beyond this saddle.
That's so we're creating a sanctuary effect.
Sanctuary effect on one side, a west side, whereas food on an east side. And then there's logging on a southwest side of this saddle. So it's kind of forced deer through this saddle, but we're all using that and being a woodsman to say that's where we're going to kill one, maybe more, mature bucks that are using these areas. So if that one, your brother, we talked about it just briefly there on the last podcast. He's hunted in the past. He hasn't had much luck. What was his approach then? How did he set up? Where did he hunt? And how can we use that information to better approach it this year?
Oh, well, guess what? Back in the day, we used to approach it with a couple of different scenarios. We used to come in from the north along, we would cross a creek, ride along the north boundary. We would walk up what we call Sawmill Holler, and then you would veer off to the left or veer off to the east and hunt it. And so anything with a south wind, and we would hunt it.
You would hunt the
we would try to hunt the center of it, but hunt it with a southeast wind where it blows back kind of where we came from.
Yeah.
So any deer that came up from the east out of the bottoms along that east facing slope, they wouldn't ever smell us.
Right.
Saw one really nice young 7-pointer in the times that we hunted it, but I hope people can understand, like, deer per square mile, based on what I know now and what we saw back in those days, I would say that deer per square mile for us was below 40. We just didn't have a lot of deer. Hardly any. And, like,
and I would say, honestly, when you think 40 about that, is typically, in a forested, timbered setting, it's about average.
About average.
About average.
What we would see, let's take that 20-acre bottom that's all now in Cattleman's Treasure from Stratton, is, you know, certain nights last year we saw 17 deer in it.
Uh-huh.
There was times where I wouldn't see 17 deer all season.
Yeah.
And, but now I wasn't the best hunter in the world, but also, it just,
are
we didn't
now?
Have, I feel like I'm pretty good now. At least I understand the game.
Right, right.
And that's probably the worst part about it is I understand what needs to be in place. And so I know where the habitat should be to have better numbers. That's why logging's happening, because I know that's the biggest step to really improve that. Because even if we pass every deer in the world, we don't have the habitat in place to withhold and feed all these deer that we want to have one day. But we just didn't have many deer. So even great bottlenecks like the North Saddle, we just didn't see many pass through. One deer every five sits was probably pretty good for the few deer we had.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're starting to get more deer, and we have more deer. We've passed up a lot of young bucks. We don't have... frankly, we don't have the spotlighting and the poaching problems along gravel road that we used to have. And we have a lot more food available. So when deer do come to the farm, or their home range overlaps the farms, is once they get there, they kind of stay because they had the best chance at surviving there. So,
well, and not only like that is, and we've seen it because of this year, there's so many acorns, but now that they're not as prevalent, or the deer seem to not be crushing them as hard, priorities are a little bit changing. We're starting to see a lot of bucks come in. It's like,
yep.
Who's that? Who is that?
We just had that 10-pointer show up, and we had the 10-pointer that we had a couple times during the summer that was on the very south. I mean, he was crossing.
Yeah.
He was 50 yards from the property line when we got pictures of him, and now he's 400 yards north, more towards the interior of the property. So we've had a couple bucks shift, and we're hoping that they stay around once they start finding the food. And even the logging is going to be great. There's a lot more cover for them.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'll be extremely beneficial. Getting back to that north saddle was another way that we used to hunt it, or Chad used to hunt it, was we would come in from the southwest along the main road, and then we'd veer off and try to hunt it on something north. And so we hunted with a couple different scenarios. The biggest issue back in those days was we had bottlenecks. We could find bottlenecks, like these saddles. But we didn't have a reason for deer to be going from point A to point B with the bottleneck being in between, because
it was just
limited food on this side and
crappy timber.
And little food on this side. There was little cover on this side and little cover on this side. There wasn't a reason for them to go from point A to point B through the bottleneck.
There was no, like, enticing. There was no attractiveness or difference in habitat. It was just, well, if I am going to go over there, I'll use the saddle, but do I need to go over there? Now it's like, there's really good bedding. It's safe. It's secure over here. All the food's over there. That's where all the does are going to be ending up at. I'm walking there because it's the easiest place. Now there's a reason. Now it's lighting up.
Yes. And, I mean, going back to maybe this podcast, does getting pestered. I don't know. Fellas, ladies that are listening to this podcast, we're doing four of them tonight. So we're going to say a lot of, like, was this podcast or the last podcast? Does getting pestered. And so, like, we're going to have great bedding on both sides, but really great food on both sides as well. But
yes,
going specifically to the North Saddle, we're going to have probably 30-plus acres of food on the east side,
yes,
with a couple food plots on the west side, but really good bedding on the west side, mediocre on the east side.
Either way, this area, this is just the precluding factor. Like, we're just getting into the really good stuff.
Yeah.
This year of activity that's going to be experienced out of that soon-to-be-set tree stand for the years to come. It's like, it's in the crosshairs, I think, of the property. Like, it's centrally located, and it's in just the heart of all the activity that's to become.
Yes. Yep. And so this area, this North Saddle, has had a lot of deer in the past. I know we tried to hang a camera in it last year, but we hang a camera on the South Saddle, which is a little more narrow. I don't know the actual difference between the two when you're looking at yardage, but the North Saddle has probably got, I don't know, I'm trying to pull up a map and measure it out, but the North Saddle is almost twice as wide as the South side.
Yeah.
And the South Saddle is, you can go through it during certain times of year and clearly see trails and sign. But the North side doesn't have that.
No, it's not like this is exactly where they cross every single day. They could cross 5 yards to the right, 10 yards to the left, 15 one day, 30 the next. It doesn't really matter. So the sign hasn't been 100% there, but to document deer a little bit better, what we did was recently there was two kind of overhanging dogwoods and they were out of scrape reach. So simply just reached up, bent them back, first couple cracks of the limb, bent that limb down. Now we've got two active scrapes, cleared out the leaves beneath them. Now when a deer does walk through there, they're going to come and check those scrapes out of convenience. And that's because, again, that they're checking scrapes this time of year. It's a point of weakness. Now every deer that will walk through there is going to be documented at those scrapes. So, and we didn't just use one. We put two and cleared out large areas beneath them to make sure that, okay, even though we haven't created that living fence in that area yet, that we talked about in the Habitat podcast, we simply created great, large, community-like scrapes in the center of this to slow deer down, make sure they check it, and be able to document them as they do it. So we have all the intel that we can get from deer moving from one side to the other day to day. We know what's happening in that area. And know then, which side do we really need to approach it from? Do we need to come from the north? Do we need to come from the south? And what probably is the best wind? That probably is going to be determined by terrain and what happens when we get in there.
Yep.
That's
honestly where the milkweed seeds could come into play to really kind of watch what's going on, because there's
beyond,
a chance.
Beyond our immediate location.
Yeah. Is it going to...
10 yards away.
Is it going to go 10 yards and then drift back, or what's going to happen?
What happens on a light wind? What happens on a stiff wind? Where does it go?
Yeah. And to me, the north saddle is going to be awesome. To me, I really like the idea of coming in from the southwest and hunting it on that north wind or northeast wind. Right now, with where we're at on the habitat, is there's really not distinct bedding on that side of the farm. What we have is a lot of acres that we don't go into that's got a lot of points and a little draws.
Said,
to
little
where
tiny
it's,
draws tucked back in.
Where they could bed anywhere in there.
I'm sure.
And
it's
not defined. This is where they're headed. That's where they're headed. And they're going to use this bottleneck to get through there. That's where the benefit of this podcast and the future of Land and Legacy is, you're going to get to see us, maybe, if you can bank back all that time and say, okay, I remember when that bottleneck was kind of was slower, them talking about it. Now it's really defined, and we're taking pictures and trying to monitor this over time to really showcase you guys how we manage this property and transformed it into a hunter's paradise.
Yeah, for sure.
So
that will
for the
be
future
cool.
Listings, turnkey hunter's paradise for the people
that's
that caught
right.
that.
Well, that's cool, because this I really do believe that this is a kind of a pivotal point in a identifying long term bottleneck of the property. As more deer come onto the property, as more deer utilize the property, they will be utilizing this bottleneck. We have years to exactly figure out how to hunt, how to approach, and it may change from year to year. But I think we've got a good plan of attack on this year how to hunt it. But there's it's funny because there's another bottleneck just down to basically from the northeast of this this saddle, the creek crossing, or just up from that creek crossing.
That's the that's the worst part about trying to hunt on a south wind is you got to drive through a pretty good right now on camera, and in the last 5 year or 10 years, that area right there is just
dynamite.
Incredible
dynamite.
And unfortunately,
missed the two food plots that you had to drive close to
get there
to even get to that creek crossing. That's really good, and then get to the saddle. So I do, definitely do believe the south approach is the wind. I mean the direction to take to access that initial bottleneck we talked about. But just up from that creek crossing is a major crossing, and we experienced it last year. We didn't hunt that exact location, but as we drove past the other day, it's like it just kind of clicked. It's like, this is the exact same trail has to be that those deer, you ended up unfortunately missing one, but we had, what it was a herd. How many deer was that?
16.
16 deer, which is a bunch for us. It was seriously a train, like nose to tail, 16 deer walked around the base of the mountain, between the base of the mountain and a creek, and dumped out into this large bottom field that we've been talking about. But because of that creek and that mountain, it's a narrow little, it's like a little pass, if you will.
And the creek is not just a creek. There's a huge erosion spot where it's like, yes, a 30-foot or 20-foot drop.
I'd say 25, where they're not, 30 foot. Yeah.
They're not going to cross it. And that's an area that my whole life, driving out, walking out, you jump deer right there.
Yeah.
And you try to hunt it, but it's like, it's way too swirly. The only real option to me, and that's why I think I've got it on long-term plans, is that little narrow valley making kind of a little runway of a food plot, or at least a big shooting lane, that then you stick a redneck blind at the very end of it, close up the windows, and that's where you're going to sit.
Yeah.
Because if you try to hunt it from a stand, which we may try, we're going to have to really tweak and play with it.
This is a conversation we haven't even had, but along either side of the road, but just dead straight west wind.
Dead straight west wind, or a really cold day where it sucks it down the creek.
Yep.
It's going to have to be, you know, we've got a few more days of monitoring these Cuddy Link cameras, and we're going to say, okay.
We are in the process of building intel to make the right approach.
I keep waiting for that next Cuddy Link email to come through while we're podcasting so I can see. But that's just one example of all the bottlenecks that are a couple of examples of the bottlenecks that we have. One of the key components of hunting successfully on bottlenecks, though, is threading that needle. Playing the game to where the deer still feel safe going through the bottleneck. The wind is correct to where they feel like everything's in place for, if there is a predator there, they're going to smell them.
Yep. And think about it, too, because why at this time of the year, what's their sole purpose? Find the next receptive doe. So when they are going throughout the landscape, the habitat, crossing your property, they're going to be working with the wind in a way that as they're moving forward, the wind's hitting them in their face, so they can be detecting what's out in front of them or off to the side if they're skirting around a bedding area. They won't be on the downwind side of that bedding area. So you've got to be able to think about that as you're hunting and making sets for the pre-rut, early November. Consider the way a deer is going to be traveling because of the natural behavior of this time of the year, what deer are doing. And a lot of our setups, we're going to talk about bedding areas next, but a lot of our setups are based on hunting downwind sides of bedding areas as we approach the rut. So now we want to, before we get there, talk about the fact that bucks are on their feet, moving, and in association, direct correlation with the wind. We've shared this research before, but Penn State had bucks collared, GPS bucks collared, and in the month of October, I believe it was the first 25 days of October, they monitored bucks. And the average was 24 miles, that buck traveled throughout those days. And it wasn't just, direct line. It was just a general amount of mileage that they traveled. So about a mile a day. Then from the 25th of October on for the next 25 days, they looked at the same bucks in the same regions, compared the two different amounts of travel that those deer did, and the second amount of travel, the second 25-day period, they traveled 96 miles on average. So they pretty much quadrupled the amount of travel that they're doing in this window that we're approaching. So if bucks are on their feet, if they're nudging does, they're going to be nudging them through the areas of high concentration, high deer traffic, these bottlenecks. So we kind of joked about it at the beginning of the podcast, but we could make this podcast super, super simple and really short and just say, what's the key takeaway from hunting bottlenecks in the first part of November, late October? Sit there. Just wait. Yeah. If you're in a good one and there's great habitat and resources on either side, you will be successful.
Or you'll at least see something. Now, we can't say that you're going to make the shot.
Yeah, that's right.
But you have a better chance at seeing a deer.
That's
it's just like
right.
if I am driving to work or we're driving in the real estate office and we do that one day a week, every week.
I was going to say, people think we only work one day a week.
Yeah, let's just say we did that one day a week and for several months out of the year. You may see the occasional guy or whatever, and he may recognize you. But if you start turn that into 5 days a week, you're going down that. You're traveling, or let's say four more times a week, and you're spending more time on the road, that you're going to see that guy more often.
Way more.
It's just the same thing with bottlenecks during the rut. The deer bucks are spending more time cruising and traveling, got a little bit bigger ranges possibly. They're just on their feet more, so there's a better chance that they're going to go through those areas that they travel through occasionally most of the rest of the time of the year.
That's right. So it just goes to show that research, how much deer are traveling. It gives you evidence that it's 24 miles compared to 96. That is a considerable amount of mileage.
I hope you remembered those correctly.
I hope I did too.
Because for me,
positive.
It was, this is how I remembered. Yeah, they moved a little. They moved a lot. That's the difference.
See, I remember numbers. Like, I can remember people's telephone numbers from, like, elementary school.
I remember a few of them.
It's
8045.
Weird.
That was my best friend's house
growing
up. Yeah, right.
That was the old girl you had a crush on that you actually never ended up
I
calling.
I could never talk to girls. It's a wonder I ever got married.
Hello, my name is
Adam. No, it was more like 8045. And I won't share the first part of it, but 8045. Hey, there's a bunch of blackbirds over here. Get over here.
Bring your BB gun.
Yeah, the starlings are migrating in. Bring your BB gun. So, yeah.
Basically, go out, camp on a good bottleneck for the next couple weeks if you have the time. Hunt it out. Good luck.
Absolutely.
That's the advice.
It's so simple, but that's really the importance of hunting bottlenecks this time of the year.
Put your time in.
And I hate to see it whenever somebody's like, I'm just not seeing like their Instagram story. I'm not seeing a lot of deer, and every they're talking about deer starting to chase, and they're spending every time they're out, they're hunting on a food plot. And
right,
I'm like,
right.
Face palm.
Yep.
Well, where do you think they're at? Yeah.
Darn it.
So,
what you doing that for?
Matt, this time of year, would you rather hunt a bottleneck that has food plots on both sides or one that's got cover on both sides?
I'm going cover on both sides, but food plot on both sides, it's still good.
Still could be good.
Still could be. I mean, I don't want to think we're not saying bucks don't go to food plots. They certainly will. They will check, but chances are they're spending more time in areas of thick cover. So I'm going with bedding areas. Would you do the same?
No, same thing. Yeah. Like I said on the last podcast, during the rut, I'd much rather be close to cover bedding than a food plot.
Ooh, here's a good one. Just to throw it out there. Would you rather hunt a plum thicket in western Oklahoma, or would you rather hunt a 3-acre clear cut in South Georgia?
Oklahoma.
You nerd.
Just because most likely, I mean, there's a lot of hunters in Georgia. West Oklahoma, there's some giants. Not to say there's not giants in Georgia, but I like that prairie setting better than a
wide
clear
open
cut.
Spaces.
Yeah. So, anyway, I hope
this
everybody
time of year would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything's better than the office. I hope everybody, and I won't say it. I almost said something and stuck my foot in my mouth. But anything's better than putting together a pack and play in the office when the bucks are chasing. But because that's what I did this evening, even though it wasn't a great night to go. So. Anyway, hopefully everybody enjoyed this podcast, and leave us a review. Check out iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page.
Next week, we are talking specifically on the Habitat podcast about creating bedding areas, because on the hunting podcast, we're talking about hunting bedding areas, and that's what you should be doing mid-November. So get ready, prepare for that one, learn. Hopefully, if you tag out on hunting bottlenecks, let us know. Send it to info@landandlegacy.tv. We want to see it. Post it on social media. Tag us on Facebook, Instagram. Let us know how your season's going, guys. We'd love to hear from you.
See you.